From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, February 7th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The Alma Performing Arts Center presents the University of Arkansas Wind Ensemble, February 17th, at 7:30 p.m. Musicians will perform chamber music, brass fanfares, masterworks, and marches. This event is free and open to the public. More information is available at almapac.org or 632-2129.
In about 7 minutes, I'll talk to Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com about Governor Beebe's words for Whirlpool's departure from Fort Smith, and we'll also discuss what to expect for the 2014 legislative session.
Plus, the Arkansas-born and raised woman who helped Pete Seeger learn songs like We Shall Overcome.
First, money being wagered on electronic gambling at Arkansas racetracks has hit the highest ever level. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas says according to the Arkansas Racing Commission, the casino-style gambling at Oaklawn Racetrack in Hot Springs and Southlawn Racetrack in West Memphis reported large numbers for 2013.
All told, they both topped $3.2 billion in EGS wagers. That is up a tremendous amount from the previous year. For West Memphis-based Southland, they posted a little over $2 billion in those electronic games of skill wagers for all of 2013. That's up 16% from the previous year, while Oaklawn in Hot Springs posted a little more than $1.1 billion in casino gambling. That's a 10% increase from the previous year. Just big numbers there. It shows that consumers are still spending their money in certain places. And apparently, more than playing the ponies or the dogs, they're preferring to play the cards and the tables.
And visitors to Oaklawn today will be spending more money on electronic gambling because for the second day in a row, all live races have been canceled due to the cold weather.
Republican Congressman Tim Griffin, who is stepping down at the end of his current term, says he is considering a run for Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas.
Been talking with my wife about it, and we're considering it. It's not final, but that excites me because it would allow me to continue public service, but at the same time be in Arkansas, which is what my decision not to run for re-election to Congress is all about. I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and being back in Arkansas would allow me to watch them grow up, which has been the challenge with Washington.
Griffin cited family concerns when he announced last year he wouldn't run for re-election. If Griffin decides to run for lieutenant governor, it would shake up the race. State Representatives Charlie Collins and Andy Mayberry are already seeking the Republican nomination. Former Highway Commissioner John Burkhalter is the only Democratic candidate. There is no incumbent after Mark Darr stepped down last week for ethics violations. A spokeswoman for the Democratic Party of Arkansas responded to the news saying in a statement that Tim Griffin would bring the dysfunctional politics of Washington to Arkansas.
Former Arkansas Treasurer Martha Schaffner is now facing federal mail fraud charges. She resigned from office last May after her FBI arrest on extortion and bribery charges. The indictment alleges Schaffner used $9,800 from her reelection campaign funds for personal expenses and that she used campaign checks to make payments between November 2010 and October 2011 on a credit card used for personal expenses. Those campaign checks reportedly ranged in value from $200 to $5,000. A trial is scheduled for March 3rd before U.S. District Judge Leon Holmes. Mail fraud carries a possible sentence of up to 50 years imprisonment, up to a $250,000 fine, and up to 3 years of supervised release.
Governor Mike Beebe has declared a state of emergency in Arkansas because of the winter weather that ravaged the state in the past week. The emergency declaration suspends normal regulations for the State Office of Purchasing, the Arkansas Building Authority, the State Office of Personnel Management, and other state departments and agencies, which allows for quicker provisioning of assistance to various cities and other jurisdictions in the state through the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management.
Arkansas's two U.S. senators have been recognized by the Enlisted Association of the National Guard of the United States. The organization lobbies on behalf of enlisted National Guard troops on Capitol Hill, and Senators Mark Pryor and John Bozeman were selected as recipients of the organization's 2014 G.V. Montgomery Eagle Award. an award given to members of Congress who contribute exceptional service to the National Guard. Senators Brian Bozeman received the award specifically for their work last year on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee in passing a number of bills regarding National Guard and Reserve retirees, putting Guard members back to work with pay during the government shutdown, and for holding the U.S. Air Force accountable for eliminating National Guard flying missions, particularly the elimination of the flying mission of the 188th Fighter Wing at Fort Chaffee.
Northwest Arkansas Community College yesterday officially opened the new Melba Shoemaker Southern Region National Child Protection Training Center. The $3 million, 16,500-square-foot facility includes two mock courtrooms, staged residence areas, interactive video classrooms, and training spaces. The center is designed to instruct current and future child protection professionals in a 16-state region. Attendees will learn how to properly recognize, report, and respond to child abuse and maltreatment. The Child Protection Training Center has been operating at NWAC since 2010, but until now had no dedicated lab facilities.
The Arkansas women's basketball team is back in the win column after a victory last night at Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus. The Razorbacks triumphed over Florida 55-49. The win pushes Arkansas's record to 3-7 in conference play and 16-7 overall for the season. The Razorbacks will return to play Sunday with a road game at Columbia, South Carolina.
The National Weather Service in Tulsa has issued a hazardous weather outlook through this evening for northwest Arkansas, northeast Oklahoma, and the Arkansas River Valley. The Weather Service predicts light snowfall this afternoon and into the evening, with snowfall of 1 to 2 inches in west central Arkansas today, but a cold air mass is expected to move into the region on Sunday, with weak upper-level disturbances bringing the chance of light wintry precipitation and snow accumulation possible at the beginning of next week.
Tonight, mostly cloudy, 20% chance of snow and a low of 19 in northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley tonight, mostly cloudy, 60% chance of snow, the lows in the mid-20s. Tomorrow, partly sunny, highs from 39 to 44. And for Saturday night, partly cloudy conditions, lows expected to range between 20 and 27. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers news, politics, culture, and much more for our region. You may also be seeing some more snow before the end of this Friday, sir.
Are you serious?
Well, a winter weather advisory for Sebastian and other counties in western Arkansas issued this morning. 1 to 2 inches possible by the end of the night tonight.
Well, it could be worse. We could be in Sochi where the toilets don't work and the light fixtures are falling from the ceiling.
And it's not snowing.
Yeah, and it's not snowing. So
that's right.
I'll take Arkansas where I have an enclosed house and the toiletry. I'm good.
Count your blessings is what you're saying. Jobless rate numbers came out this week. You had them on thecitywire.com for both the Fort Smith and Northwest Arkansas metros.
Yes, you know, we've talked about these jobless numbers for both. Obviously, for Northwest Arkansas, the numbers just continue to just be red hot. The jobless rate in Northwest Arkansas held at 4.9% in December, same as November. And the size of the workforce there continues to grow. The number of employed continue to grow. And the number of unemployed continues to drop. So for Northwest Arkansas, it's just kind of business as usual. Unfortunately, we had been on a good trend in the Fort Smith area, but the jobless rate ticked back up to 7.6% in December. And not only that, but they revised the November rate back up to 7%, which means the Fort Smith region still is on a 57-consecutive-month track for a jobless rate that's been at or above 7%. So, if you're looking for a little bit of good news, at least they were trending up. The numbers were trending up before this little December setback. So maybe come when we get the January report and February, March, maybe that trend line will continue back positive for the Fort Smith area.
You mentioned the word continue. The USA truck saga continues this week as well.
Well, and that continues on a good note, hopefully. Knight Transportation, the Phoenix Arizona-based company that was about double the size of USA Truck. The two companies have essentially agreed to what's called a standstill. Knight Transportation, which bought somewhere around 11 to 13% of USA Truck shares has agreed not to vote with those and not to use those to continue its hostile takeover. And the reason that's good for the Fort Smith region is there are around 500 good corporate jobs. The company's based in Van Buren, so it is a very important employer for Van Buren. And if that hostile takeover would have happened, I mean, it's, you know, night transportation doesn't need two corporate headquarters, so it's likely that a majority of those jobs would have been lost.
Is this a temporary, better than temporary sort of situation?
Well, it would be better if they would have just called the whole thing off, as the song goes. But they've agreed to a standstill through September. And typically, Kyle, these don't, once you get a standstill, it's rare that they come back. And but we'll just have to see what the market looks like in September, what USA Truck's earnings reports look like between now and then, how their share price holds up. Because if, you know, if USA Truck continues on the path it's on, it will become more expensive to buy. And Knight may, you know, the economic fundamentals that made USA Truck a good deal at $6 or $7 per share or at $9 per share may not be the same at a $15 or $16 per share.
This week, Governor Mike Beebe talked about many things with our friend and colleague, Roby Brock. One of them, Whirlpool and their departure from Fort Smith. And he had some very strong words.
Yes, and this is interesting. You know, Governor Beebe has typically been very diplomatic, very guarded, very statesmanlike, so to speak, in a lot of things that he says. But with Whirlpool, he has, from time to time, taken some pretty tough shots at the company. And this is not the first time, but Roby was asking the governor about the economy, and you know, it's doing better in Arkansas, but still the job numbers in for the state are not back to where they were in 2007 and 2008. So Roby was asking him about that, and Beebe fired off, and he said, you know, some of the manufacturing jobs may not recover, especially in the Fort Smith area. And he noted, and I'm quoting here, he said, you know, when Whirlpool takes their marbles and goes to Mexico, we need to quote, punish the heck out of companies that do that. And I just, that, you know, again, he is, for whatever reason, he has not been a fan of Whirlpool. You know, he essentially said in a previous interview that Whirlpool has made it difficult to try to reuse the over 2 million square foot property they left in Fort Smith. And so it's just interesting. I haven't heard him take shots at any other company like this.
Well, and he, when he talks about punishing companies, I mean, there have been companies very recently that have paid the state back some money that they had received in incentives because they didn't hit employment numbers.
Right. Hewlett-Packard. And, of course, Hewlett-Packard didn't send those jobs offshore. It's just that they didn't – the jobs never materialized.
Right. They didn't create them. Right.
It's interesting. And I'm sure the folks in Benton Harbor, Michigan, where Whirlpool's based, I'm sure they just love getting that kind of publicity from what is a very popular governor.
Fiona Hill's project continues. It looks like this may happen.
Yes. Well, it's and I got to tell you, when Lance Beattie and Dr. Nelson, they're with Fort Smith Redevelopment Partners, when they first proposed this, just like they did with the Phoenix Village Mall area in Fort Smith back in 2009, when they bought that and said they were going to renovate it, I thought they had lost their minds, and I kind of thought that with this Fiona project, but looks like they're going to do it, about a $20 million investment. It will completely rebrand that whole facility. I mean, they're going to take that down to just concrete and steel and rebuild it. It'll have a whole new financing model, and it'll be less of just a golf-focused country club and more of a social corporate club with golf amenities available. But it'll have, you know, a new pool area, a new meeting space, all this for members only, guest suites, special concierge service, medical, and airport shuttle. It's a very unique and innovative model, and he's been able to get an interesting number of folks that say, look, yeah, we want to be members when you get that up and going. So it could be an exciting development for Fort Smith, and it will certainly be a unique country club model I've done just a little bit of research, conducted just a little bit of research, and I haven't seen anything like this in a wide region. So hopefully, if he pulls it off, it may put help put Fort Smith on the map to some extent.
And finally, the legislative fiscal session will open on Monday. Yesterday, I talked with four Northwest Arkansas legislators, two Republicans, two Democrats. Conversation of the letter on the Monday edition of our show. We talked mostly about the private option, and some in the room had voted for it. There was representation of people who hadn't. The word that came up was compromise and measured and feeling that something could happen, some tweaks could take place that could get the private option funded. The unanimous thing was no one wanted to count votes yet.
Well, they don't want to count votes, and they don't really want to say where they are. This is going to be I wouldn't say it's the third rail of politics, but it's a very interesting issue. We note in some analysis on the CityWire that they're really drawing sides. There's some hardcore folks who have said that any support of the private option plan means that you must be a diehard supporter of Obama and Obamacare. And then there's another side that says if you question the private option, then you personally want to pull the plug on grandma and all those folks on Medicaid. So it's going to be a very divisive issue. And down in the Fort Smith area, for example, we've already seen a political primary come out as a result. You have Senator Bruce Holland from Greenwood who voted for that, and now Terry Rice is former state rep is going to run against him, and his platform is I'm going to push back against private option. So even on the GOP side, on the primary side, you're seeing some what can be some interesting politics. And good Lord, the filing period hasn't even started, but this is going to get interesting. And there's even some talk of trying to push the private option discussion until after the filing period, which is just purely for political purposes. But this is get ready. If you're the kind of person that likes that kind of bickering that goes on in Washington D.C., you're going to love this.
Well, it's so interesting because if a candidate is successful in attaching President Obama to his or her opponent, they have a very good chance in Arkansas of winning because he's a wildly unpopular president in this state. But when you single out some of the things that the private option does, people seem to be for it. So it's going to be an interesting messaging sort of campaign.
Well, it will be, and you hit it. It's going to be the messaging, and it's going to be who is the best with that messaging. I would think, though, I mean, folks that are going to just throw the Obama, it's easier to throw that Obamacare label out than to stop someone and explain why private option has nothing to do with Obamacare. So, it's like that old saying that I think is credited to Winston Churchill that a lie is three times around the earth before the truth has a chance to get its pants on. And I'm paraphrasing, but so that if your message is to label it Obamacare, you have an advantage over the person who has to message the benefits of private option.
All right. Well, the session starts Monday. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers politics, culture, business, and much more. Michael, have a pleasant weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
I'll try. Thanks, Kyle.
In about 6 minutes on Ozarks, the Arkansas connection to the popularity of the song We Shall Overcome.
There's a lot of conflicting stories as to how the song was first used and how it was taught to her. So kind of the, I guess, common story is that it was used by the Tobacco Workers Union when they did a strike against the American Tobacco Company in Charleston, South Carolina. And the song, which was originally We Will Overcome, had been a African-American church spiritual that was used by African-American strikers, changed the words, made it into a union song.
A woman born in Western Arkansas and an alum of the University of the Ozarks became a proponent of spreading folk songs to people everywhere. And Pete Seeger was one of the people she taught those songs to many years ago. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's Friday edition of the show, I'll be double dipping two tracks from many great recordings. In fact, so great that I couldn't stop at one track. So we'll hear two cuts from Percy Heath and Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd, Chet Baker, Grant Green, Danilo Perez, and more. That's Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m.
It is Friday, February 7th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know what we have to talk about today, right? And tomorrow and the next day and the day after that.
Snow.
No.
The Olympics.
No. Valentine's Day.
Oh, of course.
We
sure.
have to help people plan ahead.
Yes.
Although we in the newsroom have wondered why the two Valentine's Day plays on stage in Northwest Arkansas are Death Trap, about a murder, and Les Mis, an uplifting little tale about the French Revolution.
Well, maybe just people wanted to try something different other than super mushy and then just went completely the other direction.
Huh. Anyway, we have some date night choices for this weekend.
Okay.
Because it's never too early. And then all next week we'll have Valentine's events.
Very good.
You'll need insulin by the time we're done. Okay, Death Trap.
Yes.
It's a movie I love. It's a play I love. It was written by Ira Levin, who wrote The Stepford Wives and Rosemary's Baby and A Kiss Before Dying. So it's this great, scary, funny, twisted, surprising play. Foundering playwright, his nervous wife, an up-and-coming protege, and their wacky neighbor, a psychic named Helga Tindorp.
And a few twists and turns.
Oh, yeah. And I should issue the disclaimer in the break leg that my roommate Allie Carter is playing Myra, and my old friend Margaret Rutherford is playing Helga, a role that I coveted. So break a leg, Margaret, and somebody call me. Anyway, Death Trap is at 7:30 today and tomorrow and 3 on Sunday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale, and again next Friday and Saturday, and tickets are $20 for non-member adults. But also this weekend, I Love Lucy live on stage.
Very excited.
Are you going?
We're taking
you. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. It's being part of the studio audience at a taping of 2 episodes of The Lucy Show, with all the advertising and the sound effects, and it ought to be great fun. 8 o'clock tonight, 2 and 8 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, and tickets start at $29.
Right.
Music recommendations came from Kevin Kinter, our music writer, which means I'm going to read, and because I don't know.
All right.
The Rend Collective Experiment from Northern Ireland. They are going to be at John Brown University tomorrow night.
Sounds like fun.
The group's toured with contemporary Christian draws such as Chris Tomlin, and they're touring in support of a new live album called Campfire. They'll be at the Cathedral of the Ozarks, and tickets for the 7 o'clock event, that's tomorrow night, are $15 to $18 through itickets.com. And here is the first of your daily Valentine's Day installments.
Okay.
Saturday, Victorian Poetry Valentine Tea. At 2 o'clock at the Clayton House Museum in Fort Smith. Mm-hmm. That's $25. Reservations at 783-3000.
It sounds so fancy.
Doesn't it?
It does.
They're going to have...
Refined?
Yeah.
Very refined. Such a fancy word.
A Valentine Make and Take Craft Hour is at 2 at the Springdale Public Library tomorrow.
All right.
There are 2 daddy-daughter dances in Siloam Springs. I think this sounds like so much fun. The first one is at 3 o'clock for grades 4 and younger, and the second one is at 6:30 for grades 5 and over. And you can find out more about both at 524-5779. And on Sunday, it's Family Sunday iHeart Art at Crystal Bridges from noon to 5 p.m.
Not bad.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Buy flowers.
This is Ozarks at Large. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear some local musicians pay tribute to Pete Seeger in advance of a program at Nightbird Books on Monday night. Speaking of Pete Seeger, I have someone in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio who has had some interaction with the legendary folk singer. And Chelsea Hodge, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are earning your master's in history at the University of Arkansas.
Yes.
And your We'll talk about Pete Seeger in a minute, but this begins with your study of a native Arkansan.
Yes. So I research a woman named Zilphia Horton, who was a labor activist, and she worked mostly in Tennessee, but she was from Arkansas. She was born in Spadra, which is a small community outside of Clarksville, born to a white, middle-class family. Her father managed coal mines, which kind of makes her transformation into a labor activist even more compelling. But she originally radicalized after she graduated from college. She met Claude Williams, who was a Presbyterian preacher in Paris, Arkansas, who was very radical, had some dealings with communists and socialists, and preached against racism, did a whole bunch of things that made people really angry. So at his encouragement, she attended the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee, where she met Miles Horton, who she married.
Yes.
And then became Highlander's music director and worked there for the remainder of her life.
You mentioned college. She went to what is now the University of the Ozarks in Clarksville.
Yes. And she studied piano and voice. So she has a classical education in music. But as music director of Highlander, really dealt more with folk music, spirituals, hymns, people's songs.
Collected them, right?
Yes.
Collected them through other people and through what she heard.
Mm-hmm. So when students would come to Highlander and take her classes, she would first of all ask them to teach her the music that they sang in their home situation. So songs they sang in strikes, at union meetings, she would learn those from one group and then take them to another group, teach them, help this other group change the words to apply to their personal situation. So she was always learning and reteaching and just collecting and continuing to spread that music.
And though she didn't write these songs, she is credited with really kind of advancing them among the popular consciousness.
Yes, absolutely, because she published songbooks for Highlander almost every year, collect all of this music and publish them in songbooks. But then she was also asked all the time to come to union meetings. She would lead songs at different strikes for different organizations. So she wasn't just teaching this music at Highlander. She was teaching it all across the country as well.
And these songs are like a litany of the first half of the 20th century of folk music that we are this little light of mine and we shall overcome.
Yes. She learned them from two workers who attended Highlander from the Tobacco Workers Union. And there's a lot of conflicting stories as to how the song was first used and how it was taught to her. So kind of the, I guess, common story is that it was used by the Tobacco Workers Union when they did a strike against the American Tobacco Company in Charleston, South Carolina. And the song, which was originally We Will Overcome, had been a African-American church spiritual that was used by African-American strikers, changed the words, made it into a union song. So according to Pete Seeger, it was actually a black striker who came to Highlander and taught Zilphia this the song. But according to Guy and Candy Carawan, who were other labor and civil rights activists, it was actually white workers from the strike who came. They say that these workers probably did not actually sing the song at the strike, but just heard the black workers singing it. And then brought it to Highlander, and that Zilphia actually had to really work hard to convince them to sing it to her because it wasn't their song. So I don't know who is actually right. But regardless, she learned the song around 1946, actually is quoted as saying, "Its strong emotional appeal and simple dignity never fails to hit people. It sort of stops them cold silent." So right away, she started working to develop the song into something that could be used by unions and at strikes. And it was in 1946 that she taught We Will Overcome to Pete Seeger.
Right. And of course, it becomes associated with him over the next several decades. And as you mentioned, she taught him We Will Overcome.
Mm-hmm.
He changed it to Shall. Right?
Yes,
that's what I've read in the obits over the last
right.
week.
Right. So this is actually really interesting to me because I also read in his obituaries that he changed it to Shall. But when I talked to him, he said that it might have been me that added the Shall, but it wasn't just me. A black woman might have, Septima Clark. We thought it opened the voice better. So, I talked to him when he was in his mid-90s, so maybe he just was starting to misremember it, but he said that it was kind of a collective effort. I also found it really interesting that they changed it just simply because it was better to sing that vowel.
Well, and I had read, again, attributed in some obituaries, a quote to him that he wanted it to be a sing-along.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought that was an easier or better way to sing along with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think any person who sings casually or professionally could tell you that's just it just flows through the voice better.
So you talked to him last year in your research. You pick up the phone and look for upstate New York phone numbers, and there he was.
Well, actually, what happened was two professors had visited the university to talk about their book that they had just published called the Social Gospel of the Working Class. They'd interviewed Pete Seeger for this. And when I told them that I was researching Zilphia Horton, they said, oh, you got to talk to Pete Seeger. And I was, well, how does one just talk to Pete Seeger? And what they had done is written him a letter, and he had written them back with his phone number, and then they called him. So they said, just write him a letter. So I did. I just wrote him a letter and had expected him, if anything, to write me back. But he didn't. He just called. And I was in the Fayetteville Public Library, totally unprepared. I didn't have any way to record him. But luckily, I had a notebook with me. I sat down in the coffee shop of the library and just wrote as furiously as I could while he talked.
How long did you talk to him?
It was about 40 minutes.
Wow. So what all – you talked to him about her?
Yes. So I had said in the letter, you know, I was researching Zilphia Horton. I was interested in what he knew about her, their association. So most of it was him just talking. I got a couple of questions in, but he was also, I think, pretty hard of hearing and had a hard time understanding me. But he did. He talked about what he knew about her, how he mostly knew her through doing concerts. They would do fundraising concerts, especially in New York City, to raise money for Highlander.
If you ever hear a recording or a performance of We Shall Overcome, is it different for you now than it was before?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I've always been interested in the civil rights movement, especially in my master's degree, taking classes on it. But now it feels almost personal. You know, it's I'm too young to have experienced any of the actual, you know, performance of those songs in their real setting, but to know so much of its history beyond what just the popular kind of sanitized narrative of it is really something.
And what's the ultimate destination for your work?
So in the fall, I am starting the PhD program, so I'm hoping to develop this thesis into a dissertation on Zilphia Horton, hopefully turn it into a book, but we'll see about that.
When the book is out, will you come back?
I will come back for sure.
Chelsea, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Chelsea Hodge is working on her master's degree in history at the University of Arkansas. Monday night, several musicians, singers, and songwriters will gather for a Pete Seeger tribute at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. The duo's Still on the Hill, Heirloom, Smoking the Mirror will be there. So will singer-songwriters Jack Williams and Adam Cox, and two members of the band, Don't Stop Please. Yesterday, several of the musicians came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss the songs they picked to sing at the free concert. We'll hear Kelly Mulholland, Jackson Jennings, Anna Horton, Joel Ludford, and Adam Cox. It was Adam who came up with the idea to have the concert, an idea he says he developed soon after he heard Pete Seeger had died.
So I turned to my wife and I said, oh, we should do an evening honoring Pete Seeger, and I'll call around and see if I can get some people to play. And she says, oh, that's a fantastic idea. And so I took the kids to school and came home, and the first person I called was Kelly of Still on the Hill, Kelly Mulholland. And it just snowballed from there, you know. It's hard to... It's a logistical nightmare to get a bunch of musicians together and come up with a set list and make sure that nobody's playing each other's songs and stuff. It's turned out to be quite a big ordeal, but it's all coming together great, so I'm excited about it.
Well, Kelly Mulholland from Still on the Hill is here. Kelly, I know from previous conversations with you that Pete Seeger has been an important musical part of your life.
Very true, from the very beginning. And it made me so happy when I got the phone call from Adam, because I'd had my own, you know, I woke up the morning also and heard, I listened to KUAF every morning and heard that he had passed and felt very sad and wondering what I was going to do about it. I got my albums out. I have about a dozen albums, and I just kind of held them and looked at them. And suddenly, here I get this phone call. And I was so pleased that Adam was going to take this on and that I could be a part of it to celebrate his life. He's one of the greatest human beings, I think, that ever lived and he lived his life fully. In a way, you know, we don't have to be sad about Pete Seeger's death because he lived a full life. He accomplished pretty much everything he set out to accomplish.
Oh, I agree. We can only celebrate it, really.
Yeah, right.
Well, Kelly, you and I are in what I would call the same age demographic.
That's true.
So you may have known about Pete Seeger's music for decades.
Yeah, and it was a really sweet thing happened for me really early on. When my parents didn't play music, and they gave me a ukulele, and I was just playing it and driving them nuts. But they were supportive. They saw that I was really into it. And so my mother went to a record store in the 60s and asked a young man at the counter. He said, my son is playing guitar constantly, and how can I help him out, you know? And she came home with a Pete Seeger LP.
So that was like your first
way
vinyl.
Early. I was probably 11, you know, or something. And it was beautiful to me, and I loved it. And then very soon I got the Pete Seeger banjo instruction book, which I still have today.
Wow.
And so he had a big influence on me. And then politically, too, he was a big inspiration because that was somebody that not only was a consummate musician, but he was also a, you know, steady worker for peace and justice.
Mm-hmm. Jackson, Anna, you're younger. I'm just wondering when you first came into contact with Pete Seeger's music or any of the songs that he helped popularize. Do you have, is there a moment that you can point to?
I think for me, I listened to Woody Guthrie. He was one of my first kind of influences.
Yeah.
And getting down on G and C chords and stuff that's easy to play, you know, when you're learning the guitar. And so I didn't really come to know Pete Seeger until years after I'd started playing music. But just this, you know, over the past week, I've been really getting I'm trying to make up for lost time. You know, I've gotten on and watched a bunch of his old recordings and listened a lot, and kind of one of those guys where the more you learn about him, the more you love him, you know.
Well, Woody Guthrie to Pete Seeger is not obviously
a big
jump.
But I was on a different, stuck in the Woody Guthrie world.
I was introduced to Pete Seeger through some friends of mine. I also started listening to Woody Guthrie first and Arlo Guthrie and all those guys, and I'm interested in that kind of music. And I saw a live concert of Pete Seeger playing with a bunch of musicians to clean up this river in New York. Do you guys know what concert?
River.
Yeah, the Hudson River. And it was really beautiful, and that was my first time to ever hear him, and to see him live, working with all these musicians, all these, like, you know, really well-known musicians, and like all these people coming together. And I've watched that recording several times since then. It's just so powerful. And that's when I got into his music. I guess this was a few years ago. I'm kind of new to it as well, but I definitely really appreciate what he had to bring to America and all of us, for sure.
Adam, you have put together this booklet that I guess people who attend the event at Nightbird will see.
I'll just be passing them out at Nightbird, and the show's free, and the booklet is free. I might ask people if they take off with them to throw a dollar in a hat to cover the cost, but otherwise, I think it's very important. I think whenever I was talking to Kelly early on, to me, the most important part about having a show in honor of Pete Seeger is to have everyone sing along, and I can't imagine doing a Pete Seeger show any other way, you know. And so the first thing that came to my head, we're going to have a songbook, you know, so that people can sing along. You know, if you're going to do it, you do it right, you know.
Well, when you look at the songs, and of course, Pete Seeger was a writer, but he was also a popularizer. He would help take folk songs in the public domain, and make them more popular. When you look at the list that you've compiled here, Adam, I bet most people, if you've grown up in the United States or the southern United States, you've heard at least half of these, if not most of these.
Oh, easy. Yeah. And another interesting thing about it is whenever I was talking to all the different musicians that were playing at the show, I told everybody, well, you have, you know, just a few days to give me a list of songs that you feel comfortable playing. And I was worried that when people were going to give me that list, they were going to overlap with other people's songs. Because, you know, everybody has their favorite song, and that's the song that they really want to play, you know, or a couple songs that they really want to play. And I was worried that when people would say, oh, this is the song that I really want to play, that, oh, sorry, somebody else is doing that song. But in truth, it turned out that it's such a wide variety of songs and also well-known songs that people, when they picked out their favorite, it would be so drastically different from the next person's, you know, which to me is a testament to the profound effect that Pete Seeger had on America, you know.
Well, not everybody is here with the people they will be playing with, but everybody seemed to bring an instrument. So it seems as though there's a spirit of performance in the Furman Garner Performance Studio right now. Would anyone
who knows? It just might happen.
I'm opening the invitation right now. If anyone wants.
Yeah, of course we'll sing a song. Okay. Two, three, whatever. Are we ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I'm going to lay down my burden down by that riverside. Down by the riverside, gonna lay down my burden. Down by the riverside, I ain't gonna study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study that war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more.
So, Jackson, you and Dana will be performing together?
Yes, sir.
Heirloom? Uh-huh. What do you know yet what you'll be singing?
Yeah, we're going to sing Freight Train, which was actually written by Elizabeth Cotton, and then Worried Man Blues, and what was the other? What Did You Learn at School Today?
Yeah. Kelly, what about you and Donna? Or?
We're going to perform. It was a hard choice because I've got a lot of them that I love, but I chose... The Ballad of Harry Sims, which is an example. He didn't write that, but it's a song that I learned from his version. And then Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, which was a Huey Leadbetter or Lead Belly song.
And the Weavers had a huge pop hit with it.
Yes, and it goes way back. It actually has its roots in Ireland, so nobody can really claim that song. I've got a real short thing called Step by Step, which is a beautiful... it was a preamble to the Mine Workers Union back in 1870. And then finally, I was going to do If I Had a Hammer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good sing-along, of course. And so is Kisses and Sweeter Than Wine. Some of his songs are certainly not. Like the Ballad of Harry Sims is not a sing-along.
Right.
But
Anna Horton, you'll be with Joel Ludford.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
What are you guys gonna?
We're gonna do "Mary, Don't You Weep," "Somewhere Over the Rainbow," and "Turn, Turn, Turn."
Now, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow," that one I have to admit surprised me seeing this on the list because I instantly go to Judy Garland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With that. Too. But yeah. But there's a Pete Seeger connection there as well?
Yeah, he covered it, actually.
Wow.
It shocked me, too. She sent me a text with that song on it, and the first thing I did was, you know, go on the YouTubes, and I looked it up, you know, Pete Seeger, "Somewhere Over the Rainbow," and sure enough, there he was singing it. You know?
Wow.
Well, all right.
You
know.
I think there's a lot to be learned from the way he selected his songs, mm-hmm. because, you know, in this day and age, we're all, as performers, we're expected to write our own music. That's just the part of the formula now. And so when somebody puts out an album, they put out 12 songs of their own. And I know that's fine, and we do the same thing. We're guilty of the same thing. But I admire people who are willing to put their ego down
and
you know, put a few of their songs on there if they get. But on the other, there are so many great songs out there that need to be kept alive. Mm-hmm. And he was doing that.
Well, thank you all for coming in. If there's another one that you want to do, but if not, that's fine.
Oh, we could do "It Takes a Worried Man." That's as easy as
that. That sounds good.
Yeah. It takes a worried man to sing away some, but it takes a worried man to sing away some, but it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. Oh, I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. When I woke up, had shackles on my feet. But it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. But it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It's a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. 29 links of chain around my leg. Well, there's 29 links of chain around my leg. 29 links of chain around my leg. And on each link, an initial of my name. Sing a worried song. Yeah, it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long.
Well, I asked that judge, well, it's gonna be my fine. Well, I asked that judge, well, what's gonna be my fine? Well, I asked that judge, what's gonna be my fine? He said, 21 years on the Rocky Mountain line.
It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Yes, it takes a married man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. I got 21 years to pay for my awful crime, but I still got 99. Well, it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. Yes, it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long.
Thank you.
heard Anna Horton and Joel Ludford from the band Don't Stop Please, Kelly Mulholland, one half of the duo Still on the Hill, Jackson Jennings from the duo Heirloom, and Adam Cox inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Several other musicians will join them Monday night at 6 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. There is no cover charge for the concert. And we'll hear the combo we assembled yesterday sing one more song on Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning beginning at 9 on KUAF.
How important are bees?
Bees are vital to the pollination and production of our fruits and vegetables. Squash, melons, pumpkins, cucumbers.
There's just one problem.
Unfortunately, they're all in trouble.
Everything is connected, from bees to toads to wolves to you. That's on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to KUAF 91.3 FM.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Sonora. Going to watch any Olympics?
That's the plan. I plan on watching the opening ceremonies tonight.
I guess they're being tape delayed.
I'm assuming so. That's usually what happens when it's right. Different time zone.
Right.
Which is fine.
Sure. I watched a little bit last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I...
Was it qualifying or something?
No, they...
I was very confused
why
by...
they're doing it before the...
Yeah.
There were two of the things they had last night were new events.
Oh.
The team ice skating.
Oh.
So you have figure skaters.
Yes.
And instead of this being individuals or pairs, your uh-huh. scores are combined.
Oh,
and
that's
so for
fun.
The first time, yeah.
I like that.
I'm surprised that it hadn't happened before.
Sure.
And then the... What was it? The
slope style.
Oh, slope style, which is fantastic. And
have you never seen it before?
No.
Oh.
Well, now,
it's been in the Winter X Games for a while, and it is so much fun.
It is. Now, here's the thing about X Games. I don't watch X Games, not because I don't think they're real sports, not because... What have I told you about rodeo and gymnastics with me?
They make you nervous.
Because people go upside down, and if they land wrong, they're going to really get hurt, and I don't
sure.
like... But it was so majestic last night.
Mm-hmm.
That I watched it, and I was thrilled. And then they had some of the moguls, which are always fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm a big fan of hockey.
Yes.
I love the team sports, and that starts later.
Okay.
You saw some team sports last night.
I did. I missed the Olympics because I was at Bentonville High School watching the Harlem Globetrotters.
Fun?
Yeah.
First time you'd ever seen them?
First time I'd ever seen
them.
They're
so fun.
They are really fun. I'd seen them, of course, on TV and stuff randomly, but my little brother and I went, and we've always wanted to go, so it's a lot of fun. Big crowd.
Did they have the thing where they have the bucket?
Yeah.
And they're chasing around?
Uh-huh.
That turns out to be confetti.
Right.
I know, you know, I've seen that done since I was 6.
But it's still funny.
Exactly.
It was just, one of the people who was, of course, named Stretch, had to be well over 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Like, I just, so tall. Oh, and I was also really excited to see a player called TNT. She is the 9th female in
yes.
the history of the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
You know, when the Harlem Globetrotters started,
mm-hmm.
they were, not that they're not a real team now, but they played real teams. They'd play the Boston Celtics.
Right, right. This was a lot more theatrical in that the other team that they played, I think, is someone who travels with them.
Was it the Washington Generals?
No.
Oh, okay.
The World All-Stars?
Okay.
Yes. But they were part of the show, you know, with people's jerseys getting ripped
sure.
or being teased or whatever. So you could tell they were part of the
right.
show.
Good times.
It was fun.
I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned that someone was an alum of the University of the Ozarks. But when she went, it was College of the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to a school that changes your name, is it fair to say you're an alum of the new school? So like if you have a degree from West Ark, can't you say you're an alum from University of Arkansas Fort Smith?
I think so, because if you said West Ark, I would barely know what you were talking about.
Right. Okay.
Because it's always been UAFS to me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get some comments about that.
Okay.
Whether you're still an alum or not. Yeah. I would say you are.
Sure.
Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Christine and I will have Weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9. Y'all abandon me on Monday.
Yep.
I'll be myself. You and I back together Tuesday.
Yes, that's right. Have a good weekend.